This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tornadoes hit Ohio. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Tuesday, May 28th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The National Weather Service says two suspected tornadoes struck the Dayton, Ohio region last night. Millions are without power.
A man with a knife in Japan went on a stabbing rampage, killing two people and injuring more than a dozen schoolgirls.
For young adults who can't decide on a career path, we'll have a list of college majors with the most versatility.
And in the wake of Memorial Day, the mixed blessings of being a recipient of the Medal of Honor.
You know, they were young men when this happened. They did something crazy when they were 21 or 22. And then the rest of their lives is marked by that one event, those 10 seconds or 10 hours or whatever it was that earned them the medal.
Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Phillips on the emotional roller coaster represented by the Medal of Honor. He's here in about 7 minutes. The devastating severe weather that has punished much of the plains in Midwest this week is still not over. The National Weather Service says two suspected tornadoes hit the metro Dayton, Ohio area last night, just 30 minutes apart. There have been some reports of injuries, but no word on the number or extent of those. By one estimate, 5 million people were without power. The Montgomery County Twitter feed said emergency measures were being taken, such as shutting down gas lines or locating people who are trapped by debris. Blake Gifford says he's blessed to be alive.
My head's up against the wall and the wall's shaking back and forth. There's wind from the tornadoes pushing through up through the vent into my face, and I'm freaking out sitting there. It lasts about, I'd say, 10 to 15 seconds, scariest 15 seconds of my life.
Law enforcement reports that the New Life Worship Center just north of Dayton was completely destroyed. The city is asking residents to conserve water as power has been lost at both water plants and pump stations. Several other tornadoes were reported in Ohio last night, including in Salina, where numerous trees and power lines were downed. Overseas now, two people have been killed and more than a dozen schoolgirls were injured after a mass stabbing at a bus stop outside Tokyo earlier today. Japanese national broadcaster NHK said the girls, aged between 6 and 12, were students at a private Catholic school in the city of Kawasaki, south of Tokyo, and were boarding their school bus when the suspect attacked. It occurred on the final day of President Trump's 4-day state visit to Japan.
I want to take a moment to send our prayers and sympathy to the victims of the stabbing attack this morning in Tokyo. All Americans stand with the people of Japan and grieve for the victims and for their families.
The driver of the school bus reportedly told police he saw a man approach the bus stop and start slashing at people, holding a knife in both hands. NHK said a 12-year-old girl and a 39-year-old man were killed in the rampage. Authorities say a suspect was detained at the scene after stabbing himself in the neck, but later died. Police did not offer a motive. President Trump earlier today wrapped up his visit to Japan. It featured golf, sumo, a state dinner with Emperor Naruhito, and inspections of U.S. and Japanese warships. The trip was designed to showcase the alliance between the two nations during a trade battle.
We celebrate the U.S.-Japan alliance and the friendship between our freedom-loving peoples.
Concessions on trade before an upper house election in July could upset Japanese voters, especially farmers, who are important backers of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, although consumers might welcome cheaper food products. Meanwhile, Mr. Trump visited the USS Wasp and spoke to hundreds of members of the Navy's 7th Fleet.
I have to wish you all a very happy Memorial Day, right? Memorial Day, very special back home.
Some veterans and their families, by the way, don't like the phrase Happy Memorial Day, since the day is designed to honor our war dead. The president went on to refer to the sailors as a tough bunch of people and call them daring and mighty warriors in the Pacific. For those of us who are civilians, the Medal of Honor is a fascinating award, but for the servicemen who earn it, the medal is a loaded gift. It's a source of instant celebrity and an entrance into a world of opportunity and adulation. It's also a reminder of what is often the worst day of their lives, and it is a summons to a lifetime of service from those who did something so courageous as young men, so at odds with their own chances of survival that it was beyond what duty demands. It's a story by Michael Phillips, staff reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Mike, you write about one guy who went to live in a cave.
Yeah, that's Gary Bykirk. So he was a Special Forces medic in Vietnam. He was out in this outpost near the Laotian border, came under attack, just an overwhelming attack. He was shot 3 times. He was hit by shrapnel in the spine to the point where he couldn't walk around. So a couple of Montagnard troops carried him around from place to place so he could continue to treat people who were injured. So it's just an extraordinary story of valor on his part. And he came back from the war. He was, you know, feeling very angry, very alienated from society. He went and he lived in a cave. He moved into a cave in New Hampshire, got some camping gear, and just stayed there. And he would come in, you know, go into town every once in a while. He was in his, take seminary classes. He came out and got a message saying, you know, expect a call from the Pentagon, that he got a call saying you're going to get the Medal of Honor. So he went down to Washington, got his hair cut, got a uniform, went to the White House. President Nixon gave him the Medal of Honor, and then he went back to the cave. And he literally put the medal away in his duffel bag and did not look at it again for 7 years.
Wow. Explain how he feels or felt at the time with the medal, because then he started to ask, you know, to show up at events or give some remarks, as many Medal of Honor recipients do.
Yeah, Gary, you know, at first he moved into a cave to try to forget the war. And they bring him down to Washington and give him a medal for a war that he's trying to forget. And it's an overwhelming kind of thing for him. But like I said, he's a very interesting guy. And eventually, sort of in around 1981, he'd already moved out of the cave. He'd married a woman who didn't mind dating a man who was living in a cave. And he started to do some veterans events, you know, some rallies. This was right when they released the Iran hostages. And, you know, he went to an event where they were both celebrating the fact that the Iran hostages had been released and, you know, protesting the fact that they had gotten such shoddy treatment when they came back from the war. And he was happy to speak, but he didn't want to wear the medal. And one of the other vets there said, you know, don't be so selfish, Gary. Wear it for us, not for you. And that sort of, I think, set him on a different path, where he realized that the medal was symbolic and could be helpful to him, but also to other vets. And he got very engaged after that in helping other people, you know, helping counsel alcoholics and veterans with PTSD. He became a middle school counselor and spent his career in dealing with middle schoolers and their many issues. And eventually, he really came to embrace the medal. He got involved with the Congressional Medal of Honor Society. He helped develop a curriculum for schools to teach sort of civic values that are associated with the medal. So he turned the medal into something really useful for him and for the people around him, even though at first it was very off-putting for him.
Quite the 180. Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal staff reporter Mike Phillips. He's written a piece about how America's highest award for combat valor is both a gift and a constant reminder of what's often the worst day of recipients' lives. And you heard similar tales, right, about other guys going through this.
Absolutely. I mean, people handle it in different ways. But like you said, it generally, you know, they were young men when this happened. They did something crazy when they were 21 or 22. And then the rest of their lives is marked by that one event, those 10 seconds or 10 hours or whatever it was that earned them the medal.
How many Medal of Honor winners have there been, or are there still alive if they track that?
Oh, they track that, yeah. There are 70 who are still alive, and over the course of the history of the medal, which dates back to the Civil War period, there have been 3,506 medal recipients.
Wow.
3,505 of them were men. One was a woman, Mary Walker, who was a surgeon in the Civil War. She was a civilian. For a while, they took the medal away from her because she was a civilian, and then I think it was Jimmy Carter who made an exception, basically, to the rules so that she could still be a Medal of Honor recipient. So it's not that it's a small group, especially the living ones. Yeah. You know, 70 of them.
Thanks, Mike. Michael Phillips, staff reporter at the Wall Street Journal. This portion of the program is brought to you by Lightstream. Are your credit card bills keeping you up at night? Interest rates in the double digits? Be smart and pay off your credit card balances with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Get a fixed rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. The application is so fast, you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, Lightstream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind. Want to save even more? Our listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get that discount is to go to lightstream.com/deal. That's LIGHTSTREAM. Lightstream.com/deal. Stop losing sleep over that dreadful credit card debt. Contact Lightstream. Subject to credit approval, the rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/deal for more information. Again, lightstream.com/deal. It's 21 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, a rapid line fire of tornadoes tore across Indiana and Ohio overnight, packed so closely together that one crossed the path carved by another. The storms drew debris so thick that at one point highway crews had to use snowplows to clear an interstate. At least half a dozen communities from eastern Indiana through central Ohio suffered damage. Ohio resident Blake Gifford.
You could hear a pin drop. Within 5-10 seconds, it goes from dead quiet to a jet engine taking off. It's the loudest noise I've ever heard.
Some 5 million people were without power early today in Ohio alone. Towns just outside Dayton took some of the most damaging hits. A man carrying a knife in each hand and screaming, "I will kill you," attacked a group of schoolgirls and adults near a bus stop just outside Tokyo today, killing 2 and injuring 16 before killing himself. Most of the victims were schoolgirls who were lined up at a bus stop when a man in his 50s began slashing them with knives. City officials say the suspect was captured but died from a self-inflicted cut to the neck. Vice President Mike Pence, accompanied by Acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan, took part in the annual wreath-laying ceremony and delivered remarks at Arlington National Cemetery to mark Memorial Day.
On behalf of a grateful nation, it is my profound privilege to be here on the hallowed ground of Arlington National Cemetery for the 151st occasion where we gather to pay a debt of honor and gratitude.
Pence brought up North Korea's pledge to return the remains of fallen soldiers back to the U.S., but didn't mention that efforts to recover those remains have come to a halt, with U.S. officials citing a lack of cooperation from North Korea. Pence marked the somber occasion by visiting the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Disney's Aladdin, the latest in a series of live-action remakes of the company's titles, opened with a strong performance at the box office over the weekend. The live-action version of the 1992 animated hit grossed an estimated $112.7 million over the four-day holiday weekend. Last week's number one movie, John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum, got $31 million for second place. Disney's Avengers Endgame continued its record-setting haul in third place, adding $22.3 million.
Excellent. Thank you, Jen. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Ever wonder what it's like to pack customer orders at an Amazon fulfillment center? Reporter Erica Pandy at Axios recently spent an afternoon at a 1 million square foot Amazon warehouse in Baltimore. She said these jobs are among the most stressful, low-paying, and physically taxing in the country. Erica, what did you experience?
You know, millions of packages move through this warehouse. And one, you know, crazy stat they gave us is the second you press your button on your computer and press buy on, you know, a bag of chips or whatever it is, it goes to that warehouse if you're in this area, this mid-Atlantic, northeast area, and it makes it out of there within 4 hours. So it's really lightning speeds in there.
Wow. What'd you find when it comes to, say, automation versus humans in charge?
Right. You know, I wrote it this way. Everything in the warehouse that can be automated already has been. So even the shelves themselves, the employees don't walk up to them. A robot under the shelf lifts it up and brings it to you. stuff moves around in conveyor belts. There isn't anybody, you know, picking up a box or picking up an item and moving it through. The kind of holy grail when it comes to automation is still a picker robot. So the way a human can pick an object off a shelf or arrange it in a box with other things and knowing, you know, how to use space the best, that remains something that robots can't do. So for when it comes to tasks like picking and packing, you've still got humans, but everything else, there's a robot for it.
Wow. Rest assured, they're working on that angle for robots though, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Reuters reported this last week, I believe it was, that Amazon has rolled out robots that can box up items. So still can't arrange, you know, say a laundry detergent and a roll of toilet paper in one box, but if you've got something that just needs to be boxed up by itself, the robot can do it. And this is definitely something that not only Amazon, but Walmart and Alibaba and the Chinese retailers as well have been pouring money into, trying to figure out if they can get a robot to do this. So, you know, these jobs could soon disappear.
I got the sense, too, that perhaps reporters struggle to pack boxes when they don't have a lot of experience.
Yes, absolutely. I tried my hand at this, packed two boxes, and it, you know, there's a lot of elements that go into it. You got to press a button, the right size box comes through, there's tape that comes through, you've got to scan items at different points. You know, the whole thing, learning for the first time, took me 2 to 3 minutes, and then I asked, you know, the associate that was showing me how to do it, how long does this take you? And he said, you know, 15 seconds top, 5 to 15 seconds per box.
Wow.
And that's, you know, that's wild. It's just, they just set, you know, at least 4 boxes per minute, which is crazy.
Thanks, Erica. Erica Pandy at Axios. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, for all of Small Business Month, we're offering up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Plus, get additional savings when you call a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Additional savings valid May 6th through 30th at 8 a.m. Eastern on select computers from customer calls Dell. Excludes Dell Canvas, PowerEdge T30, and select order codes.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
The backyard grilling season is underway following Memorial Day weekend, but U.S. meat continues to come under fire. Dealing with raw meat can be tricky, and not cooking it properly can be deadly. As recently as last week, more than 62,000 pounds of raw beef products from Aurora Packing in Illinois were recalled due to concerns they may be contaminated with E. coli. Here's what to keep in mind this grilling season from Zlati Meyer, business reporter at USA Today. Zlati, take us through this.
Well, the burgers are obviously a classic American food, whether you buy them ready-made or make them in your backyard. They are a little bit more susceptible to danger than perhaps some other proteins that we Americans love to eat.
You know what stood out to me? That ground beef that you pick up in a store could come from 400 different animals?
Yeah, that is a very surprising number. That's the figure that experts like to quote. I mean, think about, say, a chicken breast, right? That's one item. You see it its entirety. But when something is ground up, it's coming from as many as 400 different cows. And of course, with each of those cows, there's a risk of maybe a little bit of contamination, pathogen, which of course, if it gets in, the other 399 components presumably get contaminated. So that's one of the reasons why it's a bit of a Russian roulette.
Wow. Which is, I guess, to the point why you're safer undercooking a steak, for example, than you are a burger.
That's right. I mean, there are risks of pathogens at steaks, too, but certainly with burgers, with all those many, 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 many sources feeding into that one patty that you're putting on your bun under, say, pickles and mustard, it is a little riskier.
Wow. All right. So some of the other issues here with regards to grilling meat or what?
One of the classic problems is that people don't grill their burgers or heat their burgers, fry their burgers hot enough. And that, of course, is an important step because that's the opportunity to kill the pathogens, the bacteria that gets into your food. So think about 160 degrees Fahrenheit is sort of that magical number. And, of course, that's the internal temperature, not what's the edge of the burger, which, of course, is what's sitting on the grill. So the CDC and other experts advise that people use a food thermometer. That may not be something the average cook has in their home kitchen, but it's really something that's important to make sure that that burger is thoroughly cooked. Another thing that people might do is, you know, you're bringing in the patties from the kitchen outside to the person who's manning the grill. They grill it up, and then they put those burgers back on that same plate that several minutes earlier had been used for raw meat. Well, you're sort of reintroducing, if there's a pathogen there, on those now cooked burgers, and you're back to square one.
Yeah, you do have to pay attention. We're speaking with Lottie Meyer, business reporter at USA Today, and she's written a piece entitled, "Sorry, But You're Grilling Your Burgers Wrong." What does the beef industry say on its behalf here?
Well, the beef industry is always very quick to advise people to prepare their meat properly, to cook it to that magical 160 degrees Fahrenheit internal temperature. And they also talk about the importance of sanitization and, you know, just taking the precautions. And, of course, if a person does follow all the rules that the experts recommend, it can be a fine and wonderful and delicious backyard treat, Memorial Day weekend or beyond.
Give us numbers, by the way, on how much meat we actually eat in the U.S.
Well, Americans do love their meat, right? It's sort of that iconic American food, the burger. It's been imported to other countries and sort of still thought of as that all-American food, whether it was the cowboys in the Wild West that introduced it or just sort of that iconic American McDonald's experience. But we do love meat, and we do love burgers. And according to the USDA, Americans will consume more than 59 pounds of beef per person, and that's up from 54 pounds several years ago. So it's really something that we Americans love.
Is E. coli the most popular way we could get sick when it comes to undercooked meat?
That is one of the predominant ones, and one thing to remember about E. coli versus some of the other pathogens we talk about is E. coli can kill you. It's not like some of the other bacteria where it just, you know, sends you to the bathroom for an hour or gives you stomach aches. I mean, this really, there are examples of people who have died from E. coli, so that too makes the stakes a little higher.
That's USA Today business reporter Zlotie Meyer. 21 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Many college students aren't sure what they want to major in. Indeed, nearly one in three first-time college students switch their major at least once within 3 years, according to data from the Department of Education. The social networking site LinkedIn looked at nearly a million people in the U.S. who indicated they'd graduated between April of 2017 and April of 2018, and unveiled its list of the 10 most versatile college majors, which can help you land a variety of jobs. The list from Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. Katie, set this up.
A lot of students just don't, they switch their major, they don't know what their major is. There was a big survey that said that fewer than one in five college grads said their career services offices was helpful. So it's really stressful for them. They're like, I'm going to pick a major, and that's going to determine my career, and I don't know what I want to, you know, and it sends them into a lot of stress. So there was this new LinkedIn research that came out that said, not so much anymore. You can kind of major in some things, and they can lead to a bunch of different careers. So don't get so stressed out picking that major, thinking that's the straight path to this X career. That's not so true anymore.
It is funny because as you and I were talking earlier, you're sort of an example of that. I am, right? You're a psych major.
Right.
Psych major.
And a lot of people sitting around in most jobs majored in something, you know, you look around, you're like, oh, you weren't a marketing major, or you weren't, even though you do marketing, or you know, I'm a journalist as a psychology major. And that's becoming more and more true because the job market is so good. So employers are willing to train you even if you didn't major in the perfect thing for that job.
You have to be flexible today, right? There's millions of new jobs that are going to be around in the coming years that aren't even available right now. You need the flexibility.
Absolutely. Later career training, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I mean, that's another thing to remember. I loved this quote from the LinkedIn report. It just said, don't be pigeonholed by your major. It doesn't dictate your career trajectory. So I think that it's going to take stress off college students. You know, okay, I mean, maybe, you know, this isn't perfect. Some majors, you know, computer science major, probably going to go on to do that. But yep. Some majors are really versatile.
Yep. Well, I was communication. Look at me. I'm a broadcaster now. You can't figure this stuff out. So tell us about this list, the 10 most versatile majors.
Great. Yeah. So there's 10 most versatile majors. Number one, business administration and management. And you can kind of do almost anything with that, right? Number two is marketing. Number three is psychology. Psychology majors often get ripped on. But this one, you know, people go on to do many, many different things. And then it's economics, finance, poli-sci, communication, computer science, IT, and sociology. So those, LinkedIn looked at over 1 million recent grad profiles, and they looked at their major, and then they looked at what they went on to do, and they just realized a lot of these people who majored in, you know, something are doing something very, very different from what their major might suggest.
Yeah. So does that mean necessarily that it could impact pay right out of the gate if you're, you know, doing a job that's not tied to your major?
I mean, probably, right, if they have to train you, they might pay you a little less. I think that's a general rule. And, right, you major in psychology, you're probably not going to, you know, jump out of the gate with a, you know, six-figure salary, you know. But, again, like, I think it speaks to people, you know, you don't be so stressed if you don't have the perfect major in your head. A lot of these majors that we just read, and others, I'm sure, as well, you can go on to do something, you'll figure it out, and especially in this market, this job market, you're really allowed more flexibility.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. She's written a piece about the 10 most versatile college majors in America. I thought it was interesting, too, and you can relate as a psychology major. Psych majors have a higher than average unemployment rate. What is that about?
Yeah, so I wanted to point out, you know, you're not, even though this is a very versatile major, you know, still, they have a higher than average unemployment rate, probably because, you know, even though you can do a lot of different things, not everybody is going on to do them, right? And the pay is not so great for psychology majors in general, no matter what they do, probably because a lot of them, you know, they're not going into STEM jobs often. I mean, they could, but they're not, and those are the ones that pay. So yeah, I mean, just because this list is versatile majors doesn't mean you're going to make bank coming out of school, and it doesn't guarantee you a job. But again, I just think, you know, don't stress too much about your major.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. 9 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to the National Weather Service has confirmed that a large and dangerous tornado hit last night near Trotwood, Ohio, outside of Dayton. The Ohio Department of Transportation tweeted photos of crews using snow plows to clean up debris on I-75. Matthew Hoskins is a trauma nurse in the area.
And it looks like a war zone. The houses are destroyed. The trees are almost all down. Cars are turned over. Roofs are gone over most of the houses.
Massive power outages are reported. Meanwhile, Oklahoma and Arkansas are bracing for their worst ever flooding as storms roll through the region, threatening to further bloat an Arkansas River that already has reached record crests in some areas. President Trump is returning to the U.S. after a four-day trip to Japan. Before leaving the island nation, Trump visited a U.S. warship docked at Tokyo Bay, the USS Wasp.
I have to wish you all a very happy Memorial Day, right? Memorial Day, very special back home.
Trump delivered a similar message earlier while aboard a Japanese destroyer docked nearby. He's expected back at the White House this afternoon. Attorneys general for 47 states have written to Education Secretary Betsy DeVos asking her to automatically forgive student loans for eligible disabled veterans. The Department of Education has identified more than 42,000 veterans who qualify for a federal program that offers to relieve borrowers from repaying certain government student loans. The letter says these veterans shoulder over $1 billion in education debt that could be forgiven. A Colorado climber died shortly after getting to the top of Mount Everest and achieving his dream of scaling the highest peak on each of the seven continents. Christopher Kulish, a 62-year-old Boulder attorney, died yesterday at a camp below the summit during his descent. A half dozen climbers died on Everest just last week. 49 years after Boston's Bobby Orr flew through the air following his Stanley Cup clinching goal against the St. Louis against St. Louis. Bruins defenseman Connor Clifton and Charlie McAvoy played a huge role in game one over the Blues. Both scored in the second period to tie the game at 2-2, and the Bruins went on to take the opener 4-2, the score rather.
Man, Blues winning that game 2-0.
Yes, they...
Holy... What are we doing here, St. Louis?
I think Boston had a long layoff going in, so
yeah,
a little rusty.
A little fresher.
They came back.
Gotcha. Thank you, Jen. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could be with us. For more than 70 years, Mia Verkennis of the Netherlands has tended to the grave of an American soldier in her Dutch village near the Belgian border, knowing nothing about him beyond what was inscribed on its white marble cross, which read, quote, Joseph P. Garacci, Private First Class, 26th Infantry, 1st Division, New York, November 17, 1944. The Rochester Democrat and Chronicle says Miss Verkennis didn't know he was from Rochester or that he was the only son of Italian immigrant parents or that he had three sisters. Mr. Garacci is one of nearly 18,000 American soldiers killed in World War II and buried in the Netherlands American Cemetery in the village of Margraten. At least once a year since 1945, Ms. Verkennis has visited Mr. Garacci's grave to lay flowers and pray. She is one of thousands of Dutch people and organizations who have adopted the headstones of fallen Americans there as their own. Most of the adopters are strangers to the kin of their American wards, but Ms. Verkennis was finally put in touch with Mr. Garacci's living nieces last year through an English-speaking friend. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.